enough!
Captain Farron marched forward, dismissing the Redeemer with a wave of his hand. The red-cloaked man frowned, but stalked back to his place.
Come on, the captain said, kneeling beside him. It's not far now. Let me help you.
Alesh hissed in pain as the man took hold of his bruised arms and hauled him to his feet. He stumbled forward, catching himself on the man's chest. He jerked away quickly, staring at the crimson stains on the once pristine white tunic.
Sorry,
he said, his voice a dry rasp.
Blood won't wash out. It never does.
As well it shouldn't, the man grunted, steadying him. Now come on. It's not far now. Let's finish it.
His vision still blurry from the blow, his chest heaving, Alesh started forward once more as strangers he'd never met screamed for his blood. And you'll have it, he thought. All you can stand. If what the guards had told him between the beatings was true, and he had no reason to doubt them, he would die slowly, but he would die, eventually. Something to look forward to, then. He rasped a hoarse laugh at that, and the nearby Redeemers frowned at him as if he was mad. And perhaps I am. He chanced to look at the people crowding the streets, at faces twisted in rage and fury. Perhaps we all are. And which are the scarier, really? Not nightlings, no. Us. For we do our evils in the day and night alike. A face in the crowd caught his eye, and he paused, the breath he'd been taking sticking in his throat as an invisible hand squeezed at his heart. A big, dark-haired man stared after him, his expression one of silent fury and accusation worse in its way than the shouts and curses of the crowd.
Corin,
Alesh croaked in shock.
How did...
Something struck the side of his face, whipping his head around. He spat out a mouthful of blood, and when he looked back, Corin was gone. In his place stood a short, heavy-set woman with grey hair. She wore an apron, and one of her hands clutched an iron spoon.
Gods, no!
Alesh croaked.
Please, just let it end.
The woman watched him silently, her eyes accusing, until he'd shuffled past. Alesh limped on, tears mingling with the blood on his face, fearing to look at the crowds, but unable to stop himself. He was telling himself that they were just his imagination, these ghosts, telling himself and not really believing. And then he saw her, standing in the crowd, watching him.
No,
he moaned.
Oh, God, not you.
There, in the crowd, stood Sonya, looking as real as she had in life. Alesh's cry was like the tortured wail of a dying animal, and he jerked his head away, shutting his swollen, bloody eyes. If he could have struck himself deaf and dumb then, he would have. He would have cut off his own ears, would have covered them in oil and set them alight if he could. Anything to keep from hearing her tell him of how he'd failed her.
Sonya!
He whispered in a harsh voice that barely sounded human at all.
I'm sorry. God, I'm so sorry.
Chapter 50
It was him,
Sonya pleaded through her tears.
Catherine, it was Alesh. I know it was. Why won't they leave him alone?
It's all right, baby, Catherine murmured distractedly, staring after the man as the procession went farther down the street. She'd only been able to see him for a moment before the crowd of people came between them, blocking her view, but she was struck again by how familiar he looked. Even through the blood that coated his body like a second skin, even past the dirt and filth that mingled with that blood, she'd thought she recognized him from somewhere. She realized, of course, that it had to be the little girl's certainty nagging at her, nothing more. After all, there was no way she'd ever seen the man before, and certainly no chance that it was the same man who'd been like a brother to Sonya. It just wasn't possible. Still, her heart went out to the stranger, and she was astonished by how cruel the people were. No one should have to go through what he was being forced to endure, no matter the crime. She'd asked someone in the crowd, an old man who could have been someone's kind, loving grandfather, if not for the bestial rage that flashed in his eyes and the utter hate that had filled his voice. The man had claimed that the prisoner was responsible for leading the Nightwalkers to Arliman's personal chambers, that he had come to Ilrika with the express purpose of killing Chosen Tashana as well. Catherine couldn't fathom why anyone would turn against mankind and do something so unbelievably terrible, but the old man, like the others in the crowd, harbored no doubt of the truth of it. She and the others followed after the grim procession, pushing their way through the crowd, and for a brief instant the man turned in their direction, a haunted expression in his bright, fevered gaze so terrible that she felt tears gathering in her eyes. Then, in an instant of revelation, she remembered where she'd seen him before, and her breath left her in a gasp. "No," she thought, "it can't be him. That man is back in Ilrika. What would he possibly be doing here?" "Sonya," she said, turning to kneel down in front of the girl. "This man, Alesh, you said he worked for the Chosen." The girl nodded, wiping at her eyes.
"He was a servant," she said, sniffling. "Just like me."
It's not possible, she thought, her heart thundering in her chest. But never mind what was possible or what wasn't, it was him. She knew it as surely as she had ever known anything. The broken, bloody figure that was being dragged through the street in chains was the same man that had delivered the letter from Arliman, the letter that she'd been meant to deliver to Alesha. And what of the letter? Might it contain something of the man now being led to his own execution? Something to prove his innocence? She withdrew the letter from her pocket with trembling hands. A letter from one Chosen to another. What right did she have to read it? But just then, she found that she didn't care. She took a deep breath, and, her fingers shaking, broke the seal. "Dear Alesha," it read, "I would have written you sooner, but I wanted to be as sure as possible of my suspicions before I sent this letter to you. Even now, I have far more questions than answers, but that cannot be helped. I fear that I may have waited too long already. Armidan, willing, there is still time. Something is wrong in Ilrika. There have been attacks recently. All evidence suggests that the Nightwalkers are the ones responsible, yet in my heart I do not believe it to be true. I have reason to believe that a group of people are staging these attacks to weaken the people's confidence in me, and thereby in Armidan himself. I have not been able to uncover their identities, but I feel, I know, that we are at war, one no less important than the one we fought together so long ago. There is no army camped outside the walls, no men-at-arms sieging the gates, yet we are at war just the same. I wish that there were an army, for an army can be met on the field of battle, can be scattered, defeated. But how does a man fight shadows and whispers? You may, perhaps, think that I am overreacting. I myself pray that it is so, but I do not believe it. Furthermore, my investigations lead me to believe that whoever these people are, they are well connected. Some, I am certain, even numbering among the nobles and my castle staff. As I write this, I am secreted in my rooms, hiding like a sneak thief at the approach of city guardsmen. It galls me that it has come to this, but I do not dare to act against those I believe responsible. I do not know how widespread the conspiracy is, and so stealth is the only option left me. If you believe nothing else, Alesha, please believe this. This group, this army, exists, and I fear that it will not be long before whatever they plan comes to pass. Listen, Alesha, and hear me. I said that I believe that they include nobles and high-ranking officials among their number, but if I am right, it goes even further than that. Please understand that I would not say this were I not absolutely sure, but I have discovered that at least one of the Chosen are working with them. I do not know which, but there is no question that this is true. Reading over this letter, I see that it sounds as if I am mad, but I assure you I am not. Old and tired, yes, but not mad. Not yet. I will do what I can to stop what is coming, but I fear it will not be enough. If I am successful, or if I am wrong, then this letter will not matter. But if something should happen to me, then you will have proof of my words. I am sorry, Alesia. I know that it is a heavy burden that I lay upon you, but you are the only one that I can trust, the only one I am sure of. Be careful. I do not believe this group will stop with Ulrika. Even in this letter I fear to say too much, but I will come to you soon. It has been far too long since we dined together, and there is much I must tell you. Until then, may Armidan's light guide you through the darkness and see you safe to the sun once more. Brent Holliman, High Priest and humble servant of Armidan, our Lord, and yours in love. P.S. If something should happen to me, find the man who bore this letter. He is young, with the passions of youth, but he is far greater than he or anyone else knows, and he is to be trusted. I ask for the love that you bear me, that you keep him safe. He is a good man, and like a son to me, but there is more than that. I will tell you when we meet, only remember. Above all else, Alesia, he must be kept safe. Catherine finished the letter and wiped at an unexpected tear. She turned and met Dahl's eyes.
"He brought the letter," she said,
and the Ferinan raised an eye as she handed him the parchment. He scanned it, his normally unflappable expression changing first to one of surprise, then sadness, and finally to what Catherine herself was feeling, a grim, unshakable determination. She waited until he finished. Then he looked at her and nodded once.
"What's going on?" Rian asked,
his voice suspicious as he took in the looks on both their faces.
"If we were at the card table, I'd say that you two look as if you're preparing to push all your coins forward on a losing hand."
Catherine glanced once more at Dahl, who nodded again, before turning back to Rian.
"We have to save him."
"Save who?" Rian asked.
"The prisoner."
Rian snorted.
"Sure," he said. "And while we're at it, we can pull the sun from the sky and drive all of the Nightwalkers into the sea."
He glanced between the two of them, his grin slowly fading.
"Wait. You're serious?"
Catherine nodded, fighting to keep the fear she felt out of her voice.
"I am."
She considered handing him the letter, but decided against it. True, the man had saved their lives, but she didn't know him, and the information in the letter was more than enough for some men to kill over. Instead, she folded it up and slid it back into her pocket.
"You must have lost your night-cursed mind," the man hissed, taking a step forward.
Dahl took a step closer to Catherine's side, but Rian ignored him.
"What is it with you, lady? Nearly getting killed once in a day isn't enough for you? You have to go back and make a better job of it. Why, you'd have a better chance at—" "Why did you save us?"
Catherine asked, interrupting him. He cut off, suddenly looking uncomfortable.
"What? You don't know us from anyone," Catherine went on. "We are strangers. So why did you save us? How did you even know we needed saving?"
He hesitated, glancing between her and Dahl.
That doesn't matter."
"Fine," Catherine said after a moment. "If you do not wish to tell me, I will not press you on your reasons, just so long as you do not press me on mine." The man sighed heavily, glancing at Sonya's hopeful expression, before turning back to Catherine.
"It's suicide. You know that, don't you? And you'll take the girl to her death as well."
Catherine turned to Sonya.
"He's right, sweetie. It will be dangerous. Perhaps it would be better if—" "I'm going,"
Sonya interrupted, her face twisted into a scowl, as if she expected an argument and was ready to put it down.
"Alesh is my friend, and I'm going. He was always there when I needed him. I want to be there for him, too."
Catherine opened her mouth to try to convince the girl that it would be better if she stayed in an inn until it was over, then closed it again. Would it be, really? After all, they hadn't been in the city an hour before those guards had tried to kill them. The lieutenants had no doubt already sent other soldiers off combing the streets and taverns,
searching for anybody matching their description. If she left the girl in an inn, alone, then she ran the risk of those men finding her and finishing what they'd started.
"All right," she said finally,
and the girl's eyes widened in surprise.
"All right, you'll come with us, but you'll have to promise that if things get too bad, you'll let me or Dahl take you away."
The girl considered for a moment, finally nodding.
"Okay, Catherine. I will. I promise."
Catherine smiled, then turned back to the man, who was shaking his head in wonder.
"You're all crazy."
When they didn't respond, he shrugged.
"Well, let's go, then. If I'm going to get my fool head lopped off, I'd just as soon get it over with, rather than stand around talking about it all day."
"You're coming?"
Catherine asked, surprised.
"Of course I'm coming," he muttered. "Apparently I've decided that I'm sick of breathing, and you three seem to be the best cure on offer."
Catherine considered that. There was more to this man than he was letting on. How had he known they needed help? And why had he come even when he did? Why was he willing to risk his life, even now, for three people who were all but strangers to him? Still, there was no denying the fact that he had saved them, whatever his reasons, and that they would need all of the help they could get. She caught herself starting to hum a song she'd heard in Ulrika, and stopped. She didn't remember the entire song, only that it had told the story of a sheep herder who'd found a suit of armour and joined the king's tournament. He'd lost, of course, but had ended up becoming a knight in the end, eventually saving the king himself from an assassination attempt by one of his advisers. Not an original song, far from it, but the message was clear enough. Sometimes taking a chance paid off. Of course, it also sometimes led to a quick trip to the gallows.
"Dietra, protect us."
"All right," she said. "Let's go."
By the time they started after it, the procession was no longer within sight, and they had to struggle through the press of bodies in an effort to catch up.
"Where are they going?"
Catherine puffed, laboring through the crowd with the others.
"The northern gate, I suspect,"
Rian said, glancing at the sky.
"And we need to hurry. There's not much longer until dark, and they'll make sure the gates are closed by then."
Hurrying was easier said than done, with the streets as crowded as they were, and it took what felt like a year spent fighting their way through the screaming mob before they arrived at the northern gate. Catherine's heart plummeted in her chest as she noticed that it was closed and two guards stood to either side of it, facing the city. Rian didn't hesitate, striding up to them as if they were old friends.
"Evening, lads. Why have the gates been closed early? It's not dark yet, and we need to get through."
One of the guards, a thick-chested man with a long, dark moustache and beard, met his eyes and spoke with a bored expression.
"By order of chosen Tishana herself," he said, as if reading from a proclamation, "the city gates are to be closed and barred early for the length of the carnival."
"Why?" Rian asked. "What possible—"
"I do not think to question chosen Tishana's decisions, peasant," the guard barked. "And neither will you if you know what's best for you."
"Peasant,"
Rian thought. Why would he? It wasn't until he looked down at his clothes that he remembered he was still wearing his disguise. A ratty, homespun shirt, trousers that had more holes than not, and a grimy, frayed brown cloak didn't exactly create an outfit that demanded respect. Distance, maybe, and an eye to your own coin purse, sure, but not respect. To this man, he wasn't Ariandrian Tyrrhenian, one of the city's most respected nobles, but a street urchin that spent his time sleeping in alleyways and begging for coins. He noticed the guard studying his three companions thoughtfully, and there was something in the way he looked at them that Rian didn't like.
Of course, sir," he said, bringing the guard's gaze back to him once more. "So sorry to bother you. Why, forgive me, please, if I've given offence. A fool like me'd never think of questioning her ladyship, and that's Hamidan's own truth. We'll just be getting out of your way."
The woman started to open her mouth to protest, but Rian shot her a look, and to his great relief she remained silent, following with the others as he hurried away from the gate at a fast walk. Rian cursed his own foolishness silently, fighting the urge to turn and look back. He glanced over and saw the woman staring over her shoulder at the gate.
"Turn the fuck around,"
he hissed.
She jerked, as if slapped, her gaze turning to him.
"Where do you get off telling those men who tried to kill you? They were guards, weren't they?"
Rian asked, trying to ignore the itch that was creeping between his shoulder blades as he walked on. The woman opened her mouth to answer, but stopped as her eyes went wide with realization.
"Surely you're wrong. There's no way that all of them could be in on it. Chosen Alaysia could be dead for all we know,"
Rian whispered harshly.
"Now come on. Walk fast, but be natural. The last thing we need is to look any more suspicious than we already do."
Not that that was very likely. A woman dressed like a wealthy merchant's daughter, a man dressed like a thief, a Ferinan, and a child. Oh no, they didn't stand out. Not at all. He risked a quick glance over his shoulder, and saw that the guard they'd spoken with was engaged in an animated conversation with one of his colleagues.
"We have to save him," Catherine said beside him. "But how are we supposed to get to him when they've closed all the gates? We don't even know where he is." "Oh, I think I know," Brian whispered. "There's only one place they would have taken him."
"Where?"
He shot her a look.
"They call it the Traitor's Tree."
He saw the question in her eyes, but the little girl was beside her, her eyes brimming with unshed tears, and she did not ask it.
"Just as well,"
Rian thought. "You wouldn't like the answer." The Traitor's Tree was a massive oak with a trunk so wide that 5 grown men linking hands wouldn't cover half of its circumference. But its size wasn't what it was known for. It was said that beneath its bark, the tree's flesh was a deep red and that, if sliced into, would bleed like a man with his throat cut. Probably all lies. But that didn't change the fact that it had been the place of execution for the land's worst criminals back before there even was a Valeria. Men, even a few women, if the stories his father had told him were true, were taken to the tree in chains, where they were manacled to its surface, whipped, flayed, and then left to feed the nightlings. The method was so cruel and so rarely used that, according to his father, the last execution had taken place when Rian had been little more than a baby. A hard list to get one's name on. Most crimes ended up with a stay in the castle's dungeons or a brief trip to the headsman's block. But, he supposed, if anything would earn a man a spot on the tree, assassinating one of the chosen would be it. They were coming up on a turn in the street, and Rian was just beginning to believe they were going to make it away when he heard the clear ring of drawn steel.
"Halt!"
one of the guards yelled, and Rian looked back to see the 4 guards heading toward them.
"Halt in the name of the Chosen!"
"What now?"
the woman asked, her voice tight with fear. Rian glanced over and saw that the Ferinan had already hefted the girl onto his back and was staring at him, waiting. He nodded once at the man, before turning to Catherine.
"Now," he said, "we run."
Chapter 51 The whip cracked in the air like heat lightning, and Alesh screamed a hoarse, helpless scream as it ripped a line of searing agony down his chest. He flailed helplessly against his bonds, but the metal didn't give an inch, and his struggles only served to make fresh blood leak out from under the manacles at his ankles and wrists. He'd barely been conscious when they'd hoisted him up and secured him to the massive tree. The Traitor's Tree, he thought he'd heard someone call it, but he couldn't be sure. His thoughts were disjointed, incoherent fragments floating in a sea of pain and agony, and the only thing he could be sure of was the terrible, unending pain. His arms had been secured high above his head, and the pressure of his whole body drug against them, making his wrists and shoulders feel as if they were being wrenched out of place, but he'd long since lost the strength to hold himself up. His legs were spread wide apart, and also manacled. A heavy, long chain connected his bonds and had been wrapped around the impossibly thick tree. He couldn't be sure how long he'd hung there. It could have been minutes or hours. Time, in any normal sense, had long since lost its meaning. The only time he could be certain of were the seconds after the whip struck him before he felt its bite again. Those terrible, wonderful seconds. He watched numbly through dim eyes, as the soldier started to raise the whip again, but Phelan Parr raised a hand, and the man hesitated, a disappointed look on his face.
"Where are your friends?" the leader of the Redeemers asked Alesh, in a voice that sounded almost bored. "Where are those you were working with? Why protect them when they have so easily abandoned you?"
Despite the man's words, Alesh dully noted that his men were spread out around the tree, gazing in all directions as if expecting an attack. All of them, that was, except for the man who held the whip.
"You will die, boy," the general continued matter-of-factly. "There is no other way for you, but you need not suffer any more, if only you will tell me the truth."
"I don't have any friend,"
Alesh gasped.
You killed them."
"What does he mean?"
Captain Farron asked from beside the commander of the Redeemers. The man's white armor and cloak gleamed in the dying light of the sun, as if it had been dipped in gold.
"He lies," Pa said, waving a dismissive hand. "That is all, Captain. It is what his kind does."
He turned back to Alesh, then,
"Last chance, boy. This can all end if only you will speak their names."
"Night take you,"
Alesh managed, past his raw, swollen throat. The thin man heaved a long-suffering sigh.
"So be it."
He gave a curt nod to the soldier with the whip, and for a time there was only pain. After what felt like an eternity, the captain stepped forward and grabbed the whip man's arm.
"Enough! Hasn't he suffered enough yet? Just let him die. Let it be over."
"Captain," Phelan Parr said calmly, "you overstep yourself. After all, was it not the chosen Tishana herself, the woman whom you have sworn to protect and obey in all things, that demanded this done? Surely you do not mean to go against her wishes." The captain frowned and gave Alesh a pitying look before releasing the man's arm.
"Of course, you're right," he said gruffly, "but I still don't understand why we've got to torture the poor bastard."
The thin man shrugged.
"Nor I, Captain, but it is not our duty to understand, only to obey."
Farron stared at the thin man for several seconds, then finally gave a disgusted grunt and stepped back.
"Now," the leader of the Redeemers said, turning back to Alesh, "will you tell us what you know, or must we continue?"
The next strike of the whip didn't hurt as much, and if Alesh had still cared, that would have been cause for worry. The living felt pain, after all. The dead were long past it. But what was there left to care about? He'd failed. Failed Arliman, failed Corin and Abigail, and Erwin, who'd saved him. What a fool he'd been to think that he could make a difference, that he could save Ulrika. He couldn't even save Sonya, a little girl who'd looked to him for protection. Each crack of the whip, each bloody tear it left in his flesh was no less than he deserved, no less than he'd earned. The only thing that he could be thankful for was that wherever Sonya was, she was far, far away from Phelan Parr and his humourless smile. His cold, grey eyes that drank in Alesh's torment like a tree drinks in sunlight. A pathetic victory to take to one's grave, that. But it was all he had. Chapter 52
"It shouldn't be long now,"
Rian panted, ducking under a hanging branch just in time to avoid ramming headfirst into it. They'd been running for what felt like forever. His clothes were drenched in sweat, and his legs felt as if they were on fire. The woman, Catherine, looked even worse than he felt, her face twisted in concentration as she stumbled more than ran through the dense underbrush. For his part, the Ferenan man was barely even breathing hard, despite the added weight of the little girl on his back. Rian had heard that the Ferenans were part human, part beast, but he'd always thought it nothing more than another foolish rumour, one of many that the nobles of Valeria passed around like a used-up whore. Now, he wasn't so sure. The dusky-skinned man jogged ahead of them with a steady, agile gracefulness that seemed to mock Rian's struggles. The bastard.
"I pray that you're right,"
Catherine gasped, glancing up at the sky with a worried expression on her face, and only barely managing to avoid running into a tree herself.
"It's going to be dark soon."
Rion didn't bother using what little breath he had to respond to that. He was too busy trying not to pass out, and worrying about what they would do once they came to the traitor's tree. It was a hopeless mission, trying to free the man from dozens of heavily armed and skilled guardsmen, but Javen had told him to look after the woman, so he would. He could only pray that his luck would hold out. After all, it had surely been an incredible stroke of chance that had allowed them to evade the guards in Valeria while they made their way to one of the city's secret byways. The dank, damp tunnels were one of the last remaining perks of his father's business. Rian had always thought them a depressing, pathetic legacy, but they'd proved useful enough tonight. The tunnels had been created during the Night War as a means of transferring goods and food into Valeria, even if they were under siege, and knowledge of their existence was only entrusted to a select handful of people. The Chosen, the members of her elite personal guard, and, of course, the merchant and noble who would have been expected to oversee the importing of goods in such a time, namely Rian's father, and on the day that he'd taken over the family business, Rian himself. The tunnels had aided them in leaving the city, but the architects had intended them to be used as a means of escape or as a secret mode of transporting goods into the city. The builders had, apparently, not foreseen anyone wanting a shortcut to the traitor's tree. An honest enough assumption, Rian supposed, but just then, with his eyes stinging with sweat and his chest pumping like a blacksmith's bellows, he would have had some choice words to say to them had they been present, the kind of words that cut.
"There,"
he wheezed in relief, indicating the vague shape of a large hill looming in the distance.
"We're close now."
He could just make out the enormous shape of the tree, its thick branches reaching out as if seeking to engulf everything around it. Even from this distance, it seemed too large to exist in the world he knew, a remnant of some other world, some long-forgotten time.
"Thank the gods,"
Catherine said, in between ragged breaths.
"I pray that we're not—"
She cut off, as Dahl suddenly whipped around and held a hand up for silence. He carefully sat Sonya on the ground, his eyes scanning the surrounding forest, his head cocked as if listening for something.
"What is it?"
Rian asked.
"I don't hear—"
"Well, well," a familiar voice said, as a dozen men stepped out from the trees all around them.
"I'd heard tale that Ferdinand's savages could hear a man's heartbeat, but I had thought it no more than a story the peasants used to scare their brats. It would seem that I may have been mistaken."
"Severin?"
Rian asked, shocked. The nobleman was dressed in a dark green tunic and breeches as if he were out for a hunt, though the effect was somewhat ruined by the golden lace embroidered on the sides and the golden medallion of his house hanging from his neck.
"What are you doing here?"
The nobleman smiled his cruel, oily smile.
"I do not like you, Eriandrian. I never have. Did you know?"
He laughed then, an arrogant, self-congratulatory laugh.
"Yes, I suppose you did. Ah-ha-ha," he said, flicking a lace-covered wrist at Dahl as the man stalked toward him. "I wouldn't do that if I were you, savage."
He indicated the men around him, four of which held crossbows trained on Catherine and Sonya.
"I have heard that few are better trackers and warriors than the Ferdinand. Your people are known for their speed and cunning in battle, but I doubt that even you are clever or fast enough to stop four crossbow bolts. Wouldn't you agree?"
Dahl glanced back at Catherine. The woman shook her head once, and the Ferdinand took what appeared to be a reluctant step back, so that he stood with Rian and the others. Rian watched him dumbfounded. The man had actually been prepared to attack a dozen armed and armoured men with his bare hands. It was a gods-blasted miracle that there were any Ferdinand left, if all of the bastards were as crazy as this one.
"Why are you here, Severin?"
Rian demanded.
"I don't have time for your games."
"Oh," the man said, smirking.
"This is no game, Eriandrian. Let me assure you of that. Or would you rather me call you Rian? It is the name you go by these days, is it not?"
Rian froze, stunned. If he knew that name, then he also knew of Rian's activities, but that wasn't possible unless—
"Otric,"
Rian thought. cursing himself for a fool. He'd thought the blacksmith's apprentice trustworthy, but he'd been wrong.
"Yes, Rian,"
the nobleman said, exaggerating the name as if testing the feel of it on his tongue.
"I know all about what you've been up to of late. You have been acting strangely these last few months, you see, and finally I decided to have one of my men follow you. At the time it was out of curiosity, nothing more, and always with the hope that I would catch you doing something foolish and be able to sully that sickeningly trite reputation you and your family have for honesty. Imagine my surprise, then, when my man came back to tell me that you'd been dressing up in rags and travelling to the poor district, going by the name of Rian and making deals with crime lords and vagabonds."
He tusked, like a man catching a child acting out.
"I considered letting the truth be known then. After all, such a scandal would ruin your family's reputation and thereby do wonders for my own. But if there is anything that jackdaw blademaster my father hired has taught me, it is patience. So I waited," he went on, obviously enjoying Rian's surprise. "And I waited, always looking for the best opportunity to show you for what you really are. I had very nearly decided to go ahead with it until one of my men saw you help these three commoners."
He gestured to the others with a look of disgust.
"Escape the city watch. Even still, I decided to wait, and it wasn't until I saw you try to leave the city by the northern gate that I discovered what you planned."
He smiled, obviously pleased with himself.
"You see, Rian, you are perhaps not so clever as you thought."
"What happened to my damned luck?" Rian thought angrily.
"What do you want, Severin?" he asked. "If it's money you're after, I'll give you all that I have. But you must not hinder us any longer."
The man raised his face to the sky and laughed heartily, before looking back at Rian, his eyes narrowing in anger.
"Money? You think I need your money?"
He spat at Rian's feet, his lip curling.
"It is not your money I am after, Rian, but recompense."
Rian frowned.
"Recompense? What have I ever done to you?"
The nobleman snarled.
"What have you done? Surely you cannot be so foolish as that. Did you think that I would let you belittle my house? Let you belittle me for years and do nothing about it? Oh, yes, you are a clever one, Rian, always ready with a quip or a jab to make me appear less in the eyes of the others. But you seem to have none handy now. Why is that, I wonder?"
Rian's mouth hung open in surprise.
"You can't be serious," he said incredulously. "You're doing this because you're jealous? Listen, Severin, this is serious. We aren't children any more. Jealous,"
the man hissed, interrupting him,
"of you. I am not jealous, you fool, but I will not suffer your jibes any longer. I will see that clever tongue of yours cut from your mouth and nailed to the trunk of the traitor's tree. Take them," he hissed,
motioning to several of the guards. As they stepped forward, he turned to the men with crossbows.
"If any of them tries anything, kill the woman and the girl first. They may look innocent, but they are knightling friends and would do anything to serve their dark masters."
Two of the soldiers grabbed Rian roughly by either arm, restraining him as Severin stalked forward.
"And so, Heriandrian," the nobleman said, drawing his sword, "now we see who is the better man."
Rian saw what was coming, but, try as he might, couldn't break free of the hands that held him.
"Severin, listen. You don't have to do this," he said.
But if the nobleman heard, he gave no sign. Instead, he raised his arm high and brought the hilt of his sword down in a vicious arc, and darkness, full and insistent, exploded in Rian's head.
"What happened to my luck?"
he thought, and then he fell to the ground, unconscious. Chapter 53
Over the roaring thunder of his own agony, Alesh dimly heard one of the soldiers shouting in challenge, but he kept his eyes squeezed tightly shut. He'd made the mistake of looking some time ago. It could have been minutes or hours, he wasn't sure which. The long leather straps at the end of the whip had been coated with blood as if they'd been washed in it, and small pieces of skin had hung from the folds. His blood. His flesh. He had not looked again. An answering call came from one of the other soldiers, and when another strike didn't come, Alesh tried to open his eyes. At first the lids refused to budge, but finally the blood caked their gave, and he managed to force them open. He could just make out the thin form of Phelan Parr, turned to watch the approach of a soldier who galloped toward him on a horse despite the gathering darkness. The sun was beginning to set, and the hilltop was bathed in alternating patches of light and shadow, as the trees kept out most of what little light there still was. Already the soldiers had lit several fires encircling the hillside, though, of course, none so close to Alesh that the nightlings would not be able to have their fun. "They've come," he thought madly. "It's the Nightwalkers. They've finally come for me." He was at once terrified and relieved by the thought. It would be a terrible, bloody end, but it would be an end.
"Not yet,"
a voice said beside him, and Alesh let out a choked grunt in surprise. With an immense effort, he managed to turn and look to the side, where a familiar grey-robed figure stood, staring at him with a deep, abiding sadness in his eyes.
"Priest," Alesh rasped.
"What?"
he hacked and spat out a mouthful of blood.
"What are you doing here?"
"He's not here, not really. He can't be. It's just another one of the ghosts, another of the dead come to taunt me."
"But that doesn't make sense,"
Alesh wheezed.
"You're not dead. You can't be."
He shook his head in weak denial.
"No, I won't see any more. I can't. Please, gods, I can't."
He turned away in time to see the soldier who'd been riding up jump off his horse before it had even stopped. The man rushed forward, kneeling before the commander of the Redeemers. There was an excited, eager tone to his voice, though he was too far away for Alesh to hear his words.
"It is not your time, Alesh," the old priest said beside him in a low, sad voice. "There is much to do first."
Just leave me alone,"
Alesh said, closing his eyes in an effort to banish the vision.
"Gods, why won't you all just leave me alone?"
"I cannot," the man said. "I will not. Open your eyes, Alesh. See. You must see. Do not flee to the darkness. There is no help for you there."
The man's words floated through Alesh's dazed mind, and his eyes suddenly snapped open as if of their own accord.
"I've gone mad, that's all,"
he said in a dull, lifeless voice.
"You're not real. You can't be real."
"You are not the first to say so," the old priest said, his tone one of pity and regret.
Alesh's pain-addled mind worked in desperate circles for a moment. The priest seemed real enough, as real as he ever had. But
"the gods,"
he croaked with some relief.
"They would have seen you if you were real. They would have raised the alarm."
The old priest came to stand in front of him, his form almost seeming to shimmer in the fading sunlight.
"There are many things these men do not see," the figure said, glancing around at the soldiers around the makeshift camp.
He turned to Alesh then, and by some strange trick of the fading sun, his eyes seemed to glow gold.
"Pity them, Alesh. They are blind, and it is a blindness of their own making."
Alesh didn't bother responding. What was the point? What pity he'd possessed had been stripped from him in the dungeon, along with his pride, his humanity. He had nothing left to offer to the men who were responsible, nor to a hallucination. Even if, against all logic, the priest was somehow real, what was that to Alesh? Night was coming just the same. Night and death,
and he had never really known the man.
"Don't you?"
the figure asked, as if reading his thoughts, a small, melancholy smile on his face. Alesh started at that, before he realized that of course the vision would know what was in his mind. After all, it was a part of it.
"They have them, Alesh,"
the figure said, turning to regard the leader of the Redeemers, as Phelan Parr ordered several soldiers into the woods. When the priest turned back, his eyes blazed like a dying sun.
"They have them, and only you can save them."
Alesh hissed a laugh at that. Vision or not, the man was a fool.
"Then they're doomed,"
he rasped.
"Whoever they are."
"Very well," the figure said. "I cannot make your choice for you, but ask yourself a question, Alesh. How did the Evertorch work if it was damaged?"
It took Alesh's pain-muddled mind several seconds before he understood what the man was talking about. Then it came to him. How had the Evertorch become damaged? He remembered wondering about it in Tashana's throne room, but beatings had a way of taking precedence over curiosity. Still, the more he thought of it, the more he was sure that he hadn't damaged the Evertorch after he'd taken it from Garn. The only time it could have happened was when he'd dropped it during the fight, but that was before he'd used it to drive the Nightlings away. Not a thing he remembered, but a thing that must have happened just the same. He was alive, after all, wasn't he? For a little while longer, anyway. He told himself that it didn't matter how the Evertorch had worked, that he was going to die soon regardless. But he found his thoughts returning to it just the same. Evertorches were notoriously fragile things, rendered useless at the slightest scratch. So how could it have worked? The answer was close, tauntingly close. But the hot lines of pain on his body made it nearly impossible to think, and the answer danced away from his grasp like a leaf in the wind.
"It doesn't matter,"
he hissed finally.
"What difference can it make?" "It is all of the difference,"
the priest answered matter-of-factly.
"It is the difference between truth and untruth, between light and darkness, between life and death." "You're a damned fool,"
Alesh spat, turning away. But he could not turn away from the uncertainty that the man's question had aroused in him so easily, and he was still pondering it when a group of soldiers appeared out of the dim light at the edge of the camp, leading several prisoners behind them. In front walked two men he didn't recognize. One was a dusky-skinned man who, even chained, seemed to prowl more than walk. Although his expression was unreadable, the man's eyes roamed ceaselessly, taking in everything around him as if searching for any opportunity. An opportunity that would not come, Alesh could have told him, had he cared enough. The other was a lighter-skinned man with the pronounced aristocratic features common to the nobility. He was stumbling drunkenly, one of his hands pressed against his bloody forehead, and the look of desperate resignation in his eyes showed that he, at least, knew what was to come. Behind him walked a woman with long, blonde hair. Even in the dim glow of the surrounding blazes, Alesh could see that she was strikingly beautiful, with eyes like the brightest emeralds he'd ever seen. With a start, he realized that he had, in fact, seen those eyes before, and in another instant he remembered where. She was the woman he'd met in Ilrica, the one who Chosen Olliman had sent him to find. Catherine, she'd said her name was. But how could she be here? Then he saw the last prisoner in line, and all other thought vanished from his mind. Alesh gasped, his heart lurching in his chest.
Sonia? Alesh!
The girl screamed upon seeing him.
Oh, Alesh!
She started to run toward him, but the chains around her ankles caught her, and she tumbled to the ground in a sobbing heap.
"What is this, Ambassador Parr?"
Captain Farron asked, glancing between the four prisoners.
"What have you done?"
"These four came to rescue him," Phelan Parr said in a calm voice, nodding to Alesh. He turned to a haughty-looking man with black, grease-slicked hair who appeared out of the group of guards.
"You will be rewarded for your dedication to the light, Master Ulrich," the General of the Redeemers said.
I will see to it personally. The man grinned in a smug, self-satisfied way that made Alesh hate him on sight. It is enough to serve chosen Tishana in all of her glory.
Sir, one of the soldiers asked, what would you have us do with them?
The leader of the Redeemers sighed as if with regret. I fear there is only one thing to do. They have tried to rescue a man who is known to consort with the creatures of the night. Gentlemen, we have found the co-conspirators that we have been searching for, and, for the sake of all of Entana, they will suffer the same fate as their compatriot. Stake them to the ground, and make sure their bonds are tight. Oh, and be quick about it, he said, glancing at the darkening sky. Night will be here soon.
Yes, sir.
The soldiers led the prisoners to a spot a short distance away from where Alesh hung. Then they drove metal stakes into the ground and fastened the chains of the prisoners to them with practiced precision.
You can't be serious, Ambassador, Captain Farron exclaimed, stepping forward.
Why, there is a woman and a child among them.
So there is, Captain, the leader of the Redeemers said. And it is perhaps one of the greatest tragedies of this world that darkness corrupts not only old men, but the fair and the young alike.
No,
the captain said, shaking his head.
I will not allow this. The Chosen would not approve.
Captain, Captain, Phelan Parr said, laying a hand on the man's shoulders. I know that you are upset, but you must understand that despite our personal feelings, we must do what is best for Valeria. And sometimes that means... He leaned forward, as if to whisper something into the captain's ear, and in one smooth motion withdrew a dagger from his belt and thrust it under the man's breastplate, deep into his side.
Sacrifices must be made.
The captain's body went rigid, and he grunted in shock, staring down at the blade plunged into his side with wide, disbelieving eyes. He grasped weakly at Parr's arm, but the leader of the Redeemers ignored his feeble efforts, withdrawing the blade and sticking it in again and again until the captain stopped struggling altogether, his hands on Phelan Parr's arms the only thing keeping him on his feet. Finally, his hand and wrist coated in blood, the thin man ripped the blade free with a sickening squelch, and took a step back, leaving the captain to fall to the ground. The captain lay on his side, staring up at Phelan Parr, his mouth working silently as a crimson stain spread over his white tunic.
You are a fool, Captain Farron, the leader of the Redeemers said.
A fool and a coward, and the world can afford neither now. There are big changes coming, Captain, great changes, and I am afraid you were in the way.
But the Chosen will not stand.
The captain started, but cut off in a coughing fit that left his mouth and chin coated with blood.
Fool, Phelan Parr said, shaking his head.
It is by the Chosen's order that you die.
Take him out of my sight, he said in disgust, motioning to two nearby guards who leapt to obey.
Alesh watched, stunned, as they carried the dying man away.
You bastard,
Alesh growled, staring at Sonya.
She's just a child, damn you! Let her go!
He struggled against his bonds, heedless of the pain and fresh blood that began to flow from his wrists and ankles as the manacles dug into them, but no matter how hard he tried, the metal would not give.
If he speaks again, Phelan Parr said to one of his soldiers in a cold, emotionless voice, kill the girl.
He flashed his cruel smile.
Let them be chained so that they might look upon the man who brought them to this, the man who they came to save.
Alesh was forced to watch in silence, trembling with rage, as Sonya and the others were gagged, and their chains were tied to the stakes in such a way that they were made to kneel, facing him. Alesh felt a wave of despair wash over him, mingling with his impotent fury. He'd been given Sonya back only to lose her again, and there was nothing he could do. What chance did the world have against such men? Men who would kill anyone who got in their way without a second's thought. What hope was there in a world when even Tishana, the chosen of the gods, turned against mankind?
Once it was finished and the others were secured, Phelan Parr strutted up close to Alesh where he hung, smiling widely.
"How did you think this would end, boy?
The time of men following the Chosen meekly, of being slaves to Armidan, is coming to an end."
"Night take you,"
Alesh rasped.
"You had no reason to kill him."
Phelan Parr laughed.
"The captain?"
He shrugged.
"The man asked too many questions. Besides, I would worry more about myself and my friends were I you."
He glanced at the darkening sky.
"I wonder, how do you think the creatures will make it to you, past your friends?"
With a shock, Alesh realized why the man had spaced them out in front of and around him. Fires had been set behind him, so that the Nightwalkers would be forced to come from the other direction, through Sonya and the others. The leader of the Redeemers had made it so that Alesh would be forced to watch the others be torn apart by the Nightwalkers before he, too, was finally killed. He looked desperately to Sonya. The girl watched him with wide eyes, scared, but full of what appeared to him to be hope.
"She thinks I'll save her," Alesh thought, his heart aching. "Somehow she thinks I'll be able to protect her, but I can't protect anyone. I can't even protect myself."
"You bastard,"
he growled, his anger making his mind clearer than it had been in over a day.
"I'll kill you."
A distant, hungry howl tore through the darkness, sending shivers up Alesh's spine, and Phelan Parr laughed.
"We'll talk after."
He winked at him, then turned and headed to the safety of one of the fires, leaving Alesh and the others in the gathering darkness.
"I'm so sorry,"
Alesh croaked, looking at those gathered around him.
"God, I'm so sorry."
The four other prisoners stared back at him, and though he could not see them well in the darkness, he thought he saw accusation in those stares. And he deserved no less. He had failed. Had failed Ahriman and Corin and Abigail, and now even Sonya. He had tried, had done all that he could, and it had not been enough. Not nearly.
"I failed you all."
He hung his head, unable to look at them anymore, and waited for the darkness to come. A growl sounded from the nearby trees, then another, and despite himself, Alesh found his head raising, his eyes searching the distant tree line. The leaves rustled and branches cracked and snapped as shadowy forms flitted through the dark forest. Strangely, Alesh found himself thinking of the Evertorch and of what the priest, or his vision of the man at least, had said. How had the Evertorch worked if it had been damaged?
"Why did they not kill you on the road that day?"
Alesh turned, only half surprised, to find the priest standing beside him again. Somehow, the man's eyes seemed to glow even brighter than before, though there was no light to reflect in them now, except that of the distant fires.
"What?"
he asked.
"What do you mean?"
"When you were a child," the priest said, his gaze never wavering from Alesh's own. "When your wagon was tipped and the bane came, why did you survive?"
Alesh had asked himself the same question hundreds of times since that day, had spent countless hours in Ilrika's libraries, researching everything he could about the Nightwalkers, in search of some answer to why he had lived while his parents had died, but he had found nothing.
"Someone must have saved me, that's all," he said,
confused and more than a little disconcerted by the man's golden stare. The old priest nodded, his expression serious.
"Yes, someone did."
Alesh closed his eyes. Why could it not just end? He had suffered and he had failed. When would it be enough?
"It doesn't matter," he said. "It's over now." "There is nothing that matters more,"
the priest said, walking to stand in front of him.
"It is time, Alesh. It is time for you to wake up. Time for you to come out of the darkness. How did you survive? How?
How did the Evertorch save you when it could not work? How, Alesh?
The apparition demanded.
How? I don't know!
Alesh screamed, his rage, his fear, and his self-hatred pouring out in his voice.